Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The Finance Committee of the US Senate will meet tomorrow to question Donald Trump's nominee for Health Secretary and prominent vaccine critic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Now, the nomination has drawn criticism in political and medical circles, and particularly amongst America's aging generation of polio survivors who witnessed firsthand the transformative power of safe vaccination. The current worldwide drive to eradicate polio has been spearheaded by the World Health Organization. Of course, this is an institution which President Trump has already begun to pull out of. For more on this, I'm joined in the studio by Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College Dublin, Kingston Mills, and from the UK by Reader in Water Microbiology at Cranford University, Frances Hassard. And you're both very, very welcome to the programme. Kingston, I'll begin with you. I mean, most of us listening to this will be lucky enough not to have experienced polio firsthand. Will you describe the disease for us and remind us what it does to the human body?
Polio in about 1 in 200 people can cause paralysis, and 5 to 10% of those will die from the paralysis. In the middle of the last century, about 500,000 people died each year from polio. But the vaccine was introduced in 1950. There were two vaccines, an oral and then an activated injected vaccine, and that really reduced the number of cases dramatically. Now, really, there's only two countries left in the world with endemic polio, and that's Pakistan and Afghanistan, with a couple of other countries in Africa having sporadic cases. We've almost eliminated it, but not there yet.
Right, and it's a very contagious disease.
It is a contagious disease, and some of the recent cases, it's transmitted by the fecal oral route, so it replicates in the gut, and then when people can get infected by handling nappies, for example, of a baby that has the virus.
And now, the vaccine you mentioned there, developed in 1952, that was transformative, wasn't it?
Yes, the oral polio vaccine developed by Albert Sabin was a historic breakthrough in the fight against polio. And it was followed a couple of years later by the inactivated vaccine, another type of vaccine by a scientist called Jonas Salk. And they really changed the face of polio forever. Mm-hmm. And thanks to those two vaccines, now we have virtually no cases. We've had no cases in Ireland for over decades.
Mm-hmm. Grab the pair of headphones there, Kingston, because I'm going to bring in Frances at this point. Frances, your work in monitoring wastewater, you track the spread of polio, right?
Yeah, that's right. Good morning, everyone. In lots of countries in Europe, there's been efforts to track viruses like coronavirus or polio in wastewater.
And tell me what you see in terms of polio and what's seen internationally.
So the wastewater gives us a really nice additional data set alongside conventional medical surveillance approaches. So what we do is we use the wastewater as partly as an early warning system. So the wastewater, because as Kingston highlighted, the virus can shed into the wastewater, we can detect some of the material from that virus and then see how cases emerge within specific communities. So we're almost using the wastewater system as a sort of heads-up display to see where these potential infections are occurring, and then it enables public health decision makers to sort of intervene and respond quickly.
And there was a couple of cases identified in several European countries recently: Spain, Germany, and Poland. Now, is that something to be concerned about, Frances?
Yeah, so the detection in these countries isn't something to be sort of overly concerned about at this stage. So, as Kingston was highlighting, there's obviously the vaccines, and the detection in these countries was explicitly linked to the detection of a vaccine-derived poliovirus. So this tends to occur in areas with reasonably high vaccine coverage, and importantly, within these countries there was no clinical cases of polio detected. So what does this mean? Well, it is a little bit of a wake-up call, because it means that any detection of the virus in a polio-free area suggests that there could be some gaps in vaccination coverage. So it means that we you know, we really want to start doing additional testing and, you know, make sure that, you know, the virus that's, you know, if it is, that's not circulating, basically.
Yeah, and in order to have population coverage or herd immunity, the threshold is at 80%, isn't it? And most countries are at 80% or well above. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, I mean, I'll pass over to Kingston on that one, if that's okay.
That's all right. Kingston, you had mentioned that as well, that there are only two countries really where it is endemic. But there are other countries where the vaccination rates are very low, around the 30% mark.
That's right. And fortunately for those countries, they don't have many cases. There have been, you know, Malawi and Mozambique had a couple of cases in the last few years. And they were mainly from visitors from the two countries, from Pakistan in particular, that had the virus. So the uptake rate of so all our children get the polio vaccine as part of the pediatric vaccination program at 2, 4, and 6 months, and then a booster at a school age, at primary school age. And this vaccine is very effective at preventing infection, and the uptake rate in Ireland is very good, and most European countries is very good. It's certainly high enough to prevent any polio that might come in here in a travel case. So we're not really at risk.
So then we have the two developing issues. So we have Donald Trump's announcement that he's going to withdraw from the World Health Organization. That's the organization that's spearheading the eradication of polio, and then the appointment of RFK. And there are question marks around RFK and the questions that he asks about the science around vaccination.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, the WHO. The WHO with the UNICEF and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have put something like $15 to $16 billion into eradicating polio. And that has had a tremendous impact, because they actually physically buy the vaccines and arrange the rollout of them in most of the developing countries. And it has a huge impact. And the primary objective is to eradicate polio. Mm-hmm. And they thought they would have achieved it maybe by 2010. It's been put back. And it looks like, you know, it could be another 5 or 10 years before it's eradicated, but I think they will get there. On the Trump appointment of Kennedy, I think it's very disappointing that you have someone in that such a primary position in health that is an anti-vaxxer and has openly said that he doesn't believe in vaccination. That was before he was appointed. I think he has changed
his
tune recently.
He's moderated a bit, because I was reading the BBC fact checker on this, which is always a really useful resource. He says his children are vaccinated and that he is not an anti-vaxxer, but he distrusts vaccines and ignores evidence then we know that contradicts his opinion on various health measures, including fluoride in the water.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's come out with some bizarre announcements on health, which is very worrying. And probably more worrying still is the idea that the Trump administration has paused funding for the National Institute of Health in the US. So the National Institute of Health is the biggest funder of biomedical research in the world. And Trump, in the last few days, has paused the funding to the NIH. This is a disaster for US and world medicine, because all the discoveries that lead to things like the polio vaccine come from this basic research in university laboratories that feed into the biotech companies and the farm industry that generate the vaccine. So we certainly hope that would be reversed.
Yeah. Francis, do you have an opinion on this, on the decision by Donald Trump to withdraw from the World Health Organization and then appointing RFK?
I mean, clearly, I agree that withdrawing from the WHO isn't great, and it could lead to, you know, that sort of shortfall of funding that was just mentioned. And I think, you know, for polio specifically, you know, we really want to ensure that we get that, you know, complete eradication, you know, like smallpox in the 80s. We really want to be moving to the point where there are no cases. And that's the only way that we can guarantee that, you know, children won't pick up this virus anywhere, you know, in the world, including Ireland and the UK. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the US also, because of its global leadership position in health, it does set the tone. So, you know, I think one thing that concerns me is that all European countries, or most European countries, including the UK and Ireland, have had a slight decline in vaccination rates for polio. So it's not significant in that we're still well above the 80%, you know, threshold that was mentioned earlier. But it does mean that, you know, there will be gaps appearing, particularly in the sort of multiple dose vaccination that's required for mainly the, you know, inactivated polio virus. So vaccine. So I think those kind of things are really not great. And obviously, you know, public perception is really important in this, and how we talk about vaccinations, in the medical community and scientific community. So the US has a major role to play in that. And so, you know, the fact that this has happened, I can't see it as a positive thing, no.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Afghanistan and Pakistan, which we've mentioned in terms of endemic polio, Kingston, the World Health Organization and America tends to drive vaccination campaigns in those countries, right? So this is where the difficulty arises.
Yeah, the WHO have been the central force in driving the vaccination in developing countries, including Pakistan, Afghanistan, and all the other countries where it's been eliminated or reduced. So if the WHO don't have the core funding, and they're relying on donations from member countries, mm-hmm. including the US. So if that is pulled, that is going to have a significant impact on their ability to do what they've been doing for the last 10 or 20 years.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Kingston, as well, about a report over the last few days relating to a leprosy case detected in the southwest of this country last year. How dangerous is that? Is that a concern?
No, it's not a concern, is the short answer. I mean, leprosy was a disease that had a huge stigma associated with it in the past, and it wasn't a treatable disease in the past. It's now a very curable disease thanks to multiple drugs that are given to people mm-hmm. that are infected. It's not as dangerous from the point of view of transmission as something like COVID-19 or influenza, which are readily transmitted. The mycobacterium that causes leprosy is transmitted probably by aerosol from respiratory tract, but it's not as transmissible as respiratory viruses. So it's not a worry. It is surprising that we've had a case, but that person, I believe, came from Brazil. And Brazil, there are a significant number of cases still in Brazil and a lot of other countries in Africa.
And we're also keeping an eye on bird flu. Someone in the West Midlands in the UK has contracted bird flu after close and prolonged contact with a large number of infected birds.
Yeah, well, the big difference between bird flu and something like leprosy or even COVID now is that bird flu is a very lethal disease. I mean, the case fatality was as high as 50% with this particular strain, the H5N1. And it's been growing in the US, and it's moved from birds into cattle, and there are about 900 herds, dairy herds in the US that have the virus now. And a number of farm workers have got infected with the virus, and there's been one death in the US. In the UK, this sporadic case has arisen. It's a slightly different variant than the one that's in the US, but it's worrying nevertheless, because there's no evidence that it spreads yet from man to man.
Yeah.
But if it were to mutate again, and that's what happens to flu, it's very prone to mutation, it could become a virus that then would transmit from man to man, but we don't know that yet, if that will happen.
Okay, Professor Kingston Mills and Dr. Francis Hazard, thank you both for joining us. Now, coming up next, Ciarán Byrne and Brian McIntyre from the SEAI will be here in the studio to answer all of your retrofitting questions. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.